You are now listening to Voices of the West Side with your host, John Easter.
Good morning and welcome to Voices of the West Side on Indy's Giant 90.9. I'm John Easter. Hopefully you had a great weekend, a great week. It's been interesting here. You know, we had fall break. We were off those 2 weeks, and then we came back. We were here a day, and then we got another day off, at least the students did, for professional development for teachers. And that was the same day as Election Day. Of course, there were no elections in Marion County, and, you know, it was kind of funny to see, like, people in election, the election side of things. They were all saying, there's no elections today. We're getting phone calls. People are asking, what are we voting for? And said, there's no, you can't. I saw, I think it was one of the state election officials sent out a message and said, you can't vote in the mayor's race in New York in this state. And it was kind of funny. But anyway, we had that, and then it's been 3 days back. And it's been an interesting week. So, welcome to Voices of the West Side. We're glad to be back after a couple weeks off for fall break. Once again, if you're just joining us, my name is John Easter, and we have a lot of fun on this show, as you know, and we have a great guest today. We'll get to her in just a moment, but first, you know, we like to talk about what's going on in the community, and normally it would be written on the big board, but being that we're back from fall break, it's written on these three post-it notes here on my board here. So, beginning with things that are happening tonight, the game night fundraiser from Ben Davis Boys Basketball will be 5 to 9 tonight at the Evans Event Center. That is over on Country Club Road. And if you want more information on that, you can find it online. So check out our Instagram, our Facebook. There is an announcement up about that. There's a QR code you have to follow. I'm not so good with QR codes, but I'm getting older. Also tonight is the Claremont Lions Club Fish Fry. They'll be honoring veterans tonight at the Claremont Lions Club Park over on Townsville Road. 5 to 8 p.m. tonight is the start time for that. We've got Ben Davis Girls Basketball tomorrow morning. Well, sort of tomorrow morning. It's 12:30 p.m., but JV tips at 11 a.m. We'll have coverage with Tyler Stout and Bryson Hill. Number 6 HSE at Ben Davis tomorrow. Also, the Ben Davis Diamondettes have their showcase tomorrow night. That sounds like a lot of fun. It's $10 to get in, 8 p.m. at the Ben Davis Auditorium. Tomorrow morning is the Monumental Marathon, so if you have any business tomorrow morning downtown, be aware there will be road closures because people are running 26 miles around Indianapolis, 26.2 miles, and if I did that, I would have to see our guest. Afterwards, I think if I tried to run 26.2 miles, I might have to see the Marion County coroner after I did that. But that's another story. Lots of road closures around downtown, and I take my hat off to anybody who's running in the marathon tomorrow. Also coming up, in honor of the United States Marine Corps, which our previous host Emerson Allen was a once a Marine, always a Marine. The birthday of the United States Marine Corps is November 10th. And November 11th is, of course, Veterans Day, so we salute all of our veterans. That is Tuesday, and ladies and gentlemen, that is what is on. All right. Well, I already alluded to our guest because I would have to see her if I raced in the Monumental Marathon, and it wouldn't be in this pleasant terms that we're on today. It would probably not be good for me, but we are welcoming the Marion County Coroner with us, Miss Alfarina McGinney. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I am awesome.
And
how
welcome.
Are you?
See, we have our studio audience here. We always do. So welcome to the show.
Yes, glad to be here.
And we know you had some interesting ways finding the right door and everything this morning. It is a big place here. You know, we had Congresswoman Carson on here one time on the show in school talk, and she was saying that she had been to Ben Davis before, but it just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
She's and like, I've never been to Penn Davis, well, but welcome. I am a West Sider.
Well, welcome. Yes. We were talking before. Yes. Graduate of Northwest.
Yes. 1990 graduate of Northwest High School. Yeah.
Yeah. And I graduated from here in 93 at Ben Davis High School. And so two West Siders.
Yes.
In the house. Awesome. Good morning. Did you happen to go to school 108?
I did, yes. Yeah.
See, my mother was at school 108. She was in the library.
Oh,
there.
Really?
And
oh,
she
wow.
might have been there when you were there. I don't.
Probably.
Yeah.
86, 87.
Yeah, my mom, she was an aide with Mrs. Laker, I think was the librarian.
Okay.
At 108.
Wow, small world.
Yeah.
Small world. Yeah.
So I just happened to think of that. If you went to Northwest, you probably went to.
I did go to 108.
What is Gambold Prep now,
yes.
I think.
All the school names have changed.
I know.
So sad.
I know. And, you know, my school names have changed too because I went to Fulton Junior High.
Oh, yeah.
Which is now Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
And I know all of the, if you're my age, all of our junior highs have changed here.
Oh, wow.
Because they went from Fulton, South Wayne, and Ben Davis Junior to Lyndhurst and Chapel Hill.
So it's a trend.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then they
changed the names.
Well, and back then, you know, I was in the ninth grade, but I was in the junior high. So,
yeah,
they still had ninth grade and junior high. And then they built the freshman center and put all the freshmen in there. And yeah.
Oh, wow. So, how
things have changed. Well, good morning and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for being on. I know your job as a Marion County coroner, I know it is something that you see maybe, you know, back in the days growing up, you used to see Quincy, you know, he was the medical examiner and he had his show, but you see it now kind of back in the forefront in many different ways. Death investigation, being a coroner, and it's something you've done for a while now. So tell us a little bit about your background and how you arrived to be the Marion County coroner.
Yeah. So, I started back in 1997, so I've been with the coroner's office for 28 years, and I started as an intern. I just simply needed to go to school from 1 to 5, so I had to have a job where I worked from 8 to noon. And I landed at the coroner's office, and I didn't even know what they did because I never watched Quincy.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know anything about what the coroner's office did or any type of work. And the person that interviewed me said, "Can you handle looking at dead people?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." And she shows me a picture. And I said, "Oh, okay, well, I have to handle looking at dead people because I need this job." And when I tell you day two of that job, I loved it. Mm. I fell in love with it. Now, my major was psychology, but there was no forensic science programs or anything back in the day. But I absolutely loved the work that I did. And do you know, still to this day, I love the work that I do.
Well, and I guess the question would be, how has it changed moving from kind of being a deputy coroner to being the coroner? How has your job changed?
Well, not much. You know, the difference is I just get to boss people around. But really, I still go to work every day looking at investigations and identifying how we can help families get through the worst day of their life. Mm. What types of investigations are we conducting and looking at, you know, what can we do to improve investigations overall? And so, you know, just what the coroner does is by state statute. The coroner is elected in the county in which they live. And the statute says to conduct investigations of those who died due to suspicious nature, due to homicides, suicides, accidents, and sudden and unexpected deaths, and deaths that occur in infant and children. And so that is the guided premise by way that we operate. And so we have those cases. We conduct over 4,000 death investigations a year, with performing a little over 1,600 autopsies and examinations a year. And we consult on over 2,500 death investigations where people think that they should be a coroner's case. And we make the final determination on if it falls within our jurisdiction to conduct further investigation of those deaths. And so, you know, those guided principles by state statute is really what we do. But every single day, and we've seen some changes over the years, certainly, right? You have now DNA collection that we're doing more diligently on scenes and at autopsies. There are things like certain aspects of scene investigations that you do differently now than when I was a deputy coroner, right? So we have enhanced from a national perspective and have national standards where we conduct investigations so that we don't miss anything and that we are conducting investigations adequately to get the final cause and manner of death for those that die in our county.
Alfie McGinney is our guest. She's the Marion County coroner. And obviously you were elected coroner.
Yes.
Did you ever think that you would be the elected coroner?
Not in my wildest dreams. So I started as a secretary and transitioned to a deputy part-time, then transitioned to a full-time deputy, and then was appointed chief deputy, for which I served as chief deputy for 18 years.
Wow.
And I just thought, oh, well, I'll get another.
Over multiple corners.
Over four corners, yes. Yeah. I thought, well, I'll serve under the next corner. I'll serve under the next one. And then someone asked me to run for coroner. I'm like, well, never thought about that. I got to think about that because I always, in my history and in the history of the coroner's office, all of the coroners previously have been physicians,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not a physician. And the requirement, according to state statute, is you only have to be 18 and live in the county. Well, I thought I wasn't good enough, really. Mm. You know, I thought, no, I'm not the one that can serve in that role. However, you know, the confidence that people really kind of put back on me was that, but you've been the chief deputy for 18 years. You know exactly what the requirements are and what to do and how to conduct death investigations, probably more so than the coroners that have served as elected officials over the, you know, the last 18 years. And so I took that and I ran with it and I really, you know, enjoyed the run. Really, I got a lot of support from people in the community that knew me and knew my heart, my dedication to the office and the work that the office does.
Well, and I think you probably in your line have to have a love for that job because mm-hmm. you see some pretty tough things. So how do you deal with kind of that aspect of the job?
Yeah, so I do love the work, and you have to be able to compartmentalize mm-hmm. the work that you do and not take that home. Now, I am a self-proclaimed workaholic, right? I have dealt with that as a problem, but it's a good problem. I love it, right? So you do have to be able to compartmentalize some of the emotional aspects of it, but still hold the compassion that is needed for the family. So when I say, for example, the biggest reference that I give to students is, if you work at McDonald's, right, do you go home and think about the McRib? Probably not, right?
No.
It's sort of the same for me. I can't take it home with me. When I go to work, I am dedicated to work. And I give all that I have 1,000% when I am working. Or when people call and they need my help, I'm available. I'm there. You know, I have the answers that people need and want to get through the worst times of their life. And so it helps to be able to compartmentalize.
Yeah. Alfie McGinney is our guest. She is the Marion County coroner. And if you're just joining us here on Voices of the West Side, so you've been in the office and worked there 28 years. You've seen a lot, probably everything mm-hmm. by now at that point. And you talk about leaving work at work, but you're also a business owner, correct?
I am, which someone just
recognized. I thought I read that somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So someone, one of your staff just said, "You're the gobble gobble lady." It's like, oh gosh, I have the reputation. So yeah, so my family, my dad started Gobble Gobble Food Truck back in 1999. And he started at the state fair nearly 25 years ago. So this year was 24 years. Next year will be 25 years. And he started selling smoked turkey legs. And then he retired and I took over the business about 15 years ago. And so that's what I do I call it my day job and my night job during the fair. So yes, that's my side hustle is Gobble Gobble Food Truck, where I sell smoked jumbo turkey legs at the Indiana State Fair.
I'm hungry now. Goodness gracious. Those are two different jobs.
It is very different, but it's a good break.
Right.
So I'm so glad to be able to take that break from work sometimes and just serve people. Like serving people and feeding people food, oh my goodness, your heart just opens up when people smile because they love the food. Mm-hmm. And so that gives me a different kind of fulfillment outside of the scope of working with families who are dealing with the worst day of their life. But people remember, you know, they remember how you treat them. And so that's at both jobs. People remember the good smoked turkey legs, but they also remember the compassion that you provide to them on the worst day of their life.
And you know, you talk about your job as Marion County Coroner, and I can imagine that would be a good getaway, you know, because you see different reactions,
yes,
of course,
yes,
to what you do. What do you wish was different, or not? Maybe that's the wrong way to say it. What do you wish people knew about your job that many people don't know as Marion County Coroner?
Wow. You know, what I realize is that grief is hard.
Mm.
And at the time that you're dealing with grief, you really don't know what to think. Grief is like, you know, being hit upside the head and having a traumatic brain injury. You're dealing with the loss of a loved one. And what I don't have any expectation for those who are dealing with grief because they don't know what they're feeling. And I know that experience myself personally. As I've shared publicly, I lost my son, Jimmy, in 2021 due to a drug overdose. And so what I realized all those years later is that I really didn't know anything about grief and what families were going through. I knew how I wanted to make them feel, but until I lost Jimmy, I really had no idea what this feeling of grief was, and that it doesn't go away. It doesn't step aside. It doesn't just let you live your life. It is there, and it is there for a long time. And I have learned a lot from those families. But what I do try to help them understand is that, number one, it takes a little bit of time to conduct the investigation. But it also takes time to get the answers that they need and want, so that they can begin the process of closure for what happened to their loved one. And so it is not, you know, what I wish for them to know, right? It's more about helping them understand the process. And it is a process, because sometimes it takes up to 8 weeks or 12 weeks to get to the final cause and manner of death. And that takes a lot of tests. It takes a lot of, you know, navigation with different professionals. It takes a lot of understanding internally with forensic pathologists to perform the autopsies. And we are not all knowing. You know, we sometimes look at a death investigation in one way, but it turns out to be something different. But that's a lot of moving parts and pieces that we're looking at to get to what is that one thing that caused that person to die. So I just want to make sure that we educate the community that it's not just what you see on TV.
Right.
It takes longer than an hour to determine a cause and manner of death. And it takes a lot of moving parts and pieces and professionals to look at the whole entire scope. So I call it the puzzle of death investigation, because you have all these different parts and pieces that have to come together to collectively give one picture of the cause and manner of death.
The coroner of Marion County is our guest, Alfie McGinty, here on Voices of the West Side this morning. And, couple things I could go off of there, because you said a lot. In when you put together the puzzle, so to speak, you have to talk to people.
Yes.
And in your job, you talk to a lot of different people, I'm sure, when you're trying to put things together. So what's that like? I mean, how much time do you spend on the phone, or you actually go out in the field too?
I do. Yeah. So, you know, it's a lot.
Yeah.
In fact, some of my supervisor staff, they're like, you talk all day long to people. And I do, but it's because I love what I do and I enjoy educating people. Mm-hmm. So I told you before, like, I love teachers. I love education.
And you teach too.
I teach myself at the university, at Indiana University, Indianapolis, and teaching, it just is a natural part of what I do. So, yes, I talk all day long. Sometimes when I go home, it's like, okay, I need a little bit of quiet time. I don't want to hear my voice anymore. But it's important, right? It's important to talk to the different professionals and agencies and organizations to get to what we need to get to determine the cause and manner of death. For example, on the phone yesterday with the toxicology lab, toxicology is important in these days, right? Because we're looking at more than 600 or between 500 and 600 overdose deaths. Now, that is all based on toxicology. And with new and emerging trends of drugs that are being put into the drug supply, we've got to have some knowledge and information about what is causing people to die, what are levels of certain types of drugs that are in the system, and being able to explain that to the layperson, to a family member that doesn't understand or know anything about fentanyl or doesn't know anything about ketamine or anything about any of the other types of designer or illicit drugs that are in the drug supply that we are picking up in those tox screens. So just yesterday, talking to a toxicology partner to understand what do we need to do differently, what do we need to do better to determine those drugs that are in the system and how does that relate to the cause and manner of death?
So you brought up overdose being a cause of death, and I know that's a specific area that's personal
yes.
to you as well, but also something that I think I've heard you speak before, spoiler alert, I've heard you speak before, it's something that you've talked about has changed over the 28 years, the manner, the types of drugs that are out there. So can you talk about your work with that as well?
Yeah. So, you know, our office is the coroner's office. Our job is to identify trends that we are seeing happening in our community. What types of deaths are we seeing? And so one of the things that we started to see back in 2008 through 2011 was, you know, all these deaths that were occurring as a result of heroin. Like, what's happening, right? Why are we seeing all these heroin overdose deaths? And we started to see like two or three a week. And we were like, okay, something is happening here. So I said, okay, what is the driving factor of why people are using heroin now? And what we found was from, you know, there were the pills that people had been taking that were prescribed. But then when the pills became unavailable and doctors stopped prescribing the pills, when I say pills, I mean opioids, right? Mm-hmm. Like OxyContin, oxycodone. When they stopped prescribing, then people were turning to heroin to get that same effect. Mm. And it was an addiction, right? So you go from being addicted to the pills that were being prescribed to you by a doctor to wanting the same physical and mental effect. So people started using heroin to get that effect. And so when we saw that, I reached out to the health department and law enforcement, like, okay, what is happening here? Are you all seeing the same thing? And so we put together a coalition to look at, okay, what's happening in our community? Then we started to see an influx of fentanyl in the tox screen. So looking at tox screen where we were seeing heroin, then we started to see that shift to fentanyl. We were like, so are doctors prescribing fentanyl? Because this was before we knew what was happening with how people were making fentanyl in China, being shipped to Mexico and then put it in the drug supply. So we had to do like a big deep dive as to what was happening with fentanyl that we are now seeing in the tox screen. Then we started to see norfentanyl. Then we started to see other types of analogs of fentanyl. So we started to see what were renamed by toxicologists as these different types of analogs of fentanyl. So from 2008 to 2021, we were just bombarded with the ongoing new information that was coming into the tox screen and then that was causing deaths. So trying to analyze that, making sure that it could be documented, because it was then used to look at the opioid settlement dollars, right? So how many people had been using prescribed medications that switched to heroin, but then the heroin became it had a fentanyl analog added to it because heroin is not as easy to make as fentanyl was. Mm-hmm. So it was all these dynamics that we were seeing. But that was my job, right? Looking at what are we seeing as a trend and how can we address it? Like, what do we need to do? And it wasn't until around 2022 where we started to see that there was a lack of treatment available for people who had suffered from substance abuse. And we needed to make treatment more available. Mm-hmm. And so even in my personal experience, we had to take away the stigma. So people would not even acknowledge that they had an addiction because there was a stigma attached. So families were being very quiet about it. No one was talking about it. But then, we were like, we got to talk about what can we do to stop this, because people are dying. In 2021, my Jimmy, was one of 800 people that died due to a drug overdose. Mm. And what we found was, okay, it happened to Jimmy. It happened to 800 other families. So why are we not talking about this? What is the stigma? So we got to get rid of the stigma so that we can talk about it, so we can save lives. And that, I think the work that we do as investigators to ask the questions, we were able to do that.
Now, you mentioned Jimmy. That was your son.
Yeah, Jimmy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tell us about him.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So Jimmy, he died when he was 27, and he was energetic and courageous. And one thing I can say is that he was a football player. Mm-hmm. He graduated with honors, bilingual. He graduated and went to Wittenberg University in Springfield, Ohio, on an athletic and an academic scholarship. And he loved that school. And that is, in fact, where he actually started using. And he was very open with me. We had a great relationship. We were on a journey together through his substance use. And so that's why I also encourage families to just ask the questions, like ask the questions of your children, like what is going on? And so he was just, he loved his mama, right? Like he was mm-hmm. a mama's boy. And he would oftentimes tell people, oh, yeah. Great. Oh, my yeah. God, I love a mama's boy. And he would oftentimes tell people, my mom is the coroner. She's the chief deputy coroner, and we can get you whatever you, I'm like, boy, stop telling my business. I don't just go around telling people I'm, the Marion County coroner, or at the time I was the chief deputy. But Jimmy was just, I asked him, I said, Jimmy, can I share your story of this journey that you're going through with substance use and, addiction, and what we are learning together about this? He said, Mom, you can share my story because it's your story too. Mm. And so I've learned a lot from Jimmy, and Jimmy is still kind of living through me to make sure that I'm talking to moms and dads and siblings about getting rid of that shame and stigma around that conversation of substance use.
Yeah. And that is important to remember, is that everybody has that story, mm-hmm. and it's not necessarily the end of the story
right.
that defines their life.
That's right.
But we talk about sometimes, well, they died because of this.
Yeah.
Well, there was a whole life before that. And it's nice that you're willing to share his story, because that helps others.
Yeah.
So,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for allowing me to share, because that's the same perspective that I have too, is that that does not define who our loved one was.
Right.
And so I oftentimes will ask families, tell me about your loved one. Tell me about who they were, because they were a person before all of this, before their death. And you obviously loved your loved one, right? So I love to ask families about their loved one.
Well, and that's so important too, because that's part of getting, well, you mentioned I lost my mom in 2014 mm-hmm. and, she was 73 years old and had been a cancer survivor and had Parkinson's and other ailments. And she passed peacefully in her sleep in a nursing home. So mm-hmm. it was in Hendricks County. So she did not come through your office. But didn't really need an autopsy. We knew what happened. Mm-hmm. She just went to sleep and mm-hmm. peacefully passed. So she was probably lucky in that that's how she went. But we didn't need the answers that some families do. And also something, and I see it on your Facebook page, is you will say, this person passed away on this date. We're looking for next of kin. So how difficult is it to find the next of kin sometimes?
Oh, sometimes it is challenging. What we do recognize also is that not everyone has the same family dynamics of being connected or close to their family, right? So sometimes it's a situation where We're looking for family members, and maybe the person is transient and they don't even, they're not even from the Indianapolis area. In other cases, you know, we're just trying to, that's part of our job, as that's a constitutional requirement for the coroner to identify the decedent and notify the family. So we do our due diligence to try to find any family. In some cases, we have family, but the family doesn't want to take care of things because of broken relationships. And we certainly understand that without judgment. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there are situations where we try to find family. If we don't, we started an amazing program where we will bury those that are unclaimed. So we cremate those that go unclaimed. And then once a year, we have a ceremony for them. And we have something at the cemetery where we have a whole service where we work with an organization called He Knows Your Name, and we will call their name at that service so that they are laid to rest with dignity and respect. So that's one of the programs that I started about 5 years ago to make sure that every decedent has a proper final disposition.
Well, we are out of time, unfortunately. I feel like we could do another hour with you, but we so appreciate you coming in.
So glad to be here.
That last thing kind of gets you a little bit because, you know, so many people do pass away and you may not know their story, but they still had a story.
Exactly. That's exactly what we say at the ceremony. We may not know what it was, but they had a story.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know why it is, but I always think about, you know, all these students that we have in here at Ben Davis High School. We were all born at different times and everything, but our stories all come together.
Yeah, I love that.
You know, and it's kind of part of being a human, I think.
Yes,
so,
I love that.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for the invitation. Yeah. I absolutely love this. This is great to share information with our community.
Well, we appreciate you. And if people need to get a hold of you, how can they do that?
Just contact the Marion County Coroner's Office, 317-327-4744. Leave a message and, you know, we'll get back with you if you have questions about anything. I often tell people, just ask. There's no dumb question. Just ask us.
Thank you again so much for being here. It was a great episode. I feel like we could do another hour.
We may have to.
Hey, I know the general manager here. I think maybe I can squeeze another hour out of him. Yeah. But thank you so much. That was Alfarina McGinty, the Marion County Coroner. And we appreciate you again for sharing your stories and what it's like to be the Marion County Coroner.
Yeah.
I think you educated a lot of people today. I know. No, you educated me. I was one of those dumb people when we started. So next week, we'll be talking about food insecurity. We have the organizer, or one of the organizers, of the Thanksgiving food drive here at Ben Davis. Ms. Melissa Edwards will be our guest next week. And that'll wrap up Voices of the West Side, if I can find my outro. It's been a week. Thanks for being with us.
All right.
To the parents and to the teachers, our students have so much to give. You must teach them to be investors in themselves and their communities. What you give out is what you're going to be given back. And students, remember, your future is in the hands of the ones you hang with. It's okay to be a copycat, just copy the right cat. Don't get caught with the wrong crowd. And as always, the views expressed on Voices of the West Side are not necessarily the views of the MSD of Wayne Township, Ben Davis High School, or WBDG. From all of us here at Voices of the West Side, we'll see you on down the road. Make sure to join us next time. I'm John Easter, over and out. Have a great weekend.